Now on the show, we feature a conversation with Ashley Green, Habitat Section Chief at the Utah Division of Wildlife Resources, and Brandon Weston, Environmental Services Director at the Utah Department of Transportation. Green and Weston joined me in studio to talk about their agency's collaboration on the construction of wildlife crossings on Utah's highways. All right, guys. Well, I wanted to begin this conversation by asking a pretty basic question. What are wildlife crossings? And Ashley, maybe you can address that simple question.
Well, that is a good question. You know, just generally speaking, wildlife crossings are land bridges, or, you know, usually in the form of overpass type structures, or any bridges, you know, culverts, underpass bridges, those types of things, basically that are put on the landscape to allow wildlife permeability across a specific roadway. And that's, you know, kind of the science and the goal behind placing wildlife crossings, is putting them places where wildlife, you know, have a tendency to want to cross. And so, you know, we don't disrupt migration movements and those, you know, types of things.
How long ago did Utah start building these? I mean, have they been around for decades, or what's the sort of history there?
Well, the concept's been around for quite a long time. Utah had one installed on I-15, and I think it was actually a conversion of an overcrossing back in 1975. And that's one of our first in the state that I'm aware of. But since then, we've been looking at opportunities to incorporate wildlife crossings into our projects as we can.
And that first one came as a result of public safety issues, or the idea of trying to help animals migrate? Maybe, you don't know.
That was a long time ago. I would guess both, because those two things go together.
Yeah, and that was back when I-15 was, you know, first being built, you know, back in the mid-70s. And this particular overcrossing happens to occur south of Beaver, you know, over a mountainous pass where, you know, there was a tendency for animals to migrate. And so that, you know, that's kind of the, you know, was the early beginnings of wildlife crossings in Utah. And since then, in the decades to follow, you know, that's, we've done a lot more work in the state.
Yeah, I was going to ask, how, you know, since then, how many have been built, or how many are there now?
Well, that's a good question. I don't have an exact number, but there's, you know, as far as, of course, there's a lot of different structures that maybe were built, you know, along our highways that weren't specifically, quote, you know, called wildlife crossings, but they do function at passing animals, you know, everything from little small pipes and culverts to, big underpass bridges. But, you know, as far as specific wildlife crossings, I'd say there's several dozen easily that have just been built in the last two decades.
When we're looking at these crossings, we're mainly talking about freeways, highways, and trying to find a way for animals to get, you know, either over or under or around them. Are they all basically the same thing? Are they all tunnels? Are they all bridges?
It really depends on the landscape. You know, if you've got topography that lends itself to an undercrossing as opposed to an overcrossing. Overcrossings are rare for specific for wildlife, especially in the state and around the country, because usually we try to incorporate those wildlife crossings into some sort of drainage feature where we don't have to build a structure specific for wildlife, but one that will accommodate them.
Why are they needed?
You know, having large animals on roads creates a safety hazard, you know, for the public. And so, you know, that, you know, first and foremost, that's always our goal, is to try to, you know, keep our roads safe. And so by, you know, building crossings and putting them in areas where we have high travel and high migration routes, and a lot of animals that live along the roadway, that allows us to try to keep animals off the road and to minimize wildlife vehicle collisions. We also have long-standing, you know, wildlife migration routes from big game, you know, deer and elk wanting to move, you know, down from high elevations to lower elevations in winter months. You know, we need to be able to, you know, build those features into our transportation system to allow that to occur.
What are the costs of these things? How much do they cost?
Well, we've seen them from the range of $5 million down to a couple hundred thousand. It depends on the scale. So we really try to find ways to cost effectively integrate these things into our projects, because we see our needs tend to grow faster than our funding does. So it can vary is the easy answer, because wildlife mitigation in terms of roadways could be fencing, it could be cattle guards to prevent them from getting on the roadway, all the way up to a structure built exclusively for wildlife.
Is the number of collisions the sort of defining factor in determining where you put one of these crossings?
It's a large factor for us, and we track where we are having wildlife collisions. And so we try to take that data in, and working with the DWR, try to incorporate that into where are the animals actually living and where are they trying to get from and to, and does it make sense with this carcass collection data that we have to locate something in there in that same segment of roadway.
from DWR's perspective, is that a way to look at where animals are trying to get across?
Yeah, certainly. You know, that data helps us fine tune, you know, a lot of the other data that we use. You know, other bits of information we have that help us try to determine where we need crossings and maybe what type of crossing that we need is, you know, just, you know, we know where animals are based upon their habitat requirements. You know, we, as a state wildlife agency, we have mapped habitats for a lot of our species, you know, so we know, you know, where they are. We also have several research projects that we've done in certain areas, you know, where, you know, we'll have collar data, so we know exactly where those animals tend to travel. Mm-hmm. You know, we're going to ride down to the specific drainage, even both sides of the road, and we can kind of track those annual movements that also help us know. But the collision data, you know, doesn't lie. You know, when there's animals laying in a road and there's a high occurrence in a small area, you really know that that's their tendency and that's where they want to cross, and that really helps us fine-tune where we'd put these. Because, as Brandon said, they are expensive. You know, we can't put wildlife mitigation along every mile of road in Utah, and so we have to be really, really strategic and really careful, you know, in our planning. And so we make sure that we're, you know, when we get these on the landscape, that they're in the right location, it's the right type of structure, and so it'll work well.
Trying to be effective. How many, I mean, I don't know if you guys can address the stats here, but how many collisions are there, and what's the sort of most common species that people crash with?
Well, that's a great question. You know, that's the magic number that everybody always wants. And, of course, we don't know exactly because we don't collect carcasses. You know, we don't monitor every road in Utah. But it is thousands of animals a year throughout the state. And the highest occurrence on that we have documented is definitely with mule deer, probably, you know, 70 to 75% of all the animals, you know, on that we collect, you know, along the roadways are mule deer. And so, of course, you know, that being a bigger animal and the occurrence in some areas obviously, you know, provides pretty significant public safety hazard, you know, that we always need to be conscientious of.
In addition to trying to fix the problem of them crossing, do you try to limit their numbers, control their numbers?
Well, mule deer is actually one of our most important game species that we have. It's always been here. It's kind of, you know, historically, you know, mule deer is really important in Utah. And so right now, you know, we're not looking to control their numbers. We're actually trying to, you know, stabilize and even grow the population. And so, you know, obviously highway vehicle collisions are one of those factors that we deal with, as well as a lot of a host of other issues, you know, that are affecting deer, not just in Utah, but throughout the western United States. So, it's just, you know, it is an important topic in Utah for us, and that's why we're, you know, working, you know, trying to work as closely as we can with the Department of Transportation to try to answer those questions on, you know, and to try to, you know, make sure that we're, you know, limiting the impact that we have on of cars on our wildlife populations, but, you know, first and foremost, obviously the public safety issues behind it.
How do you guys track results? I mean, how do you look at having built this wildlife crossing? How do you know that it's working?
A lot of it is we've got the historic data of a specific roadway where we think a wildlife crossing would benefit. One good example is on I-70, where we had a section of highway that was having a lot of deer crossing issues, a lot of vehicle wildlife collisions. And so we had a set of data for years leading up to the wildlife mitigation effort that we put in place there. And then we kept tracking that area to see if there was a decline in the number of wildlife vehicle collisions. And in some cases, that we've seen as much of a 90% reduction in those hits in that same stretch.
Do we have other kinds of wildlife crossings or wildlife corridors or things that aren't necessarily associated with building around roads? I'm thinking of maybe fish ladders or tunnels for amphibians or things like that.
Well, again, most of our wildlife crossings are aimed at the barriers, you know, to a wildlife movement. So, you know, by and large, most of those at least are going to be found somehow, you know, interconnected, you know, with some kind of a transportation network. And so most of the work that we've done in the recent past has been, you know, aimed at the larger species because that's the, you know, species that causes the biggest public safety hazard. But certainly, you know, when you're placing, you know, large wildlife crossings on the landscape, most of these smaller critters are also going to use those. And, you know, that's kind of the idea behind it. Let's make sure that we kind of take, you know, whatever the target species is, and let's make sure that we build it so it'll be successful for that. And then most of those other smaller type species, you know, should use it. And we've actually documented that in a lot of instances. We actually just completed a 6-year camera study with Utah State University and Dr. Patty Kramer, where we had field cameras basically on 30-something structures throughout the state of all different types and sizes. And we were basically, you know, trying to document what types of species, how many used all these different crossings, and showed that by and large, most of the structures that we built in the past in the recent past are being used by wildlife of all different sorts. So, you know, let's just say that there was an underpass that was placed on you know, Highway 6 in Spanish Fork Canyon. It was built, you know, specifically to pass larger animals such as deer, elk, and moose. And, you know, we are documenting those species are using it, but we've also had a lot of documentation, you know, from those camera pictures that a lot of smaller critters are using it as well. And so that's kind of the idea behind it. Let's build it big enough for the target species, and then all the other critters will, you know, will typically use it as well.
That's interesting. It makes me think about Highway 6 has had a reputation in the past as being a very dangerous road to drive on. And I'm wondering if this is helping to solve that problem.
We have seen similar results on Highway 6 as we have on our other successful wildlife crossings throughout the state. US 6, a lot of what we did was we worked in partnership with DWR, USU, US Fish and Wildlife Service, the BLM. I think the Forest Service was part of that committee, as well as Federal Highways, to bring all the players together and talk about all of the issues along the corridor. So we took a global look at US 6. We had the opportunity as we were looking at that area through an environmental impact statement to see what was really needed, both in terms of other safety issues and capacity issues and also wildlife issues. So we had a chance to take a look at the universe of issues on US 6 and provide a lot of safety benefits as well as driving benefits, if that's a term, the drivers.
Sure. The reason I got interested in this topic was because out at the Utah-Nevada border or thereabouts, there's a new structure. It's a bridge, and this bridge is used for elk and deer crossing, and part of the rationale behind building it was that there were studies that said that the deer, or maybe it was all large game animals, I'm not certain, but that they preferred this kind of pass or this kind of crossing. Is there really sort of a preference among the animals of what to use? Can you guys gauge that?
There has been some thought in the past, I think, to, you know, are overpasses or underpasses better. You know, we have shown through this study that I just, you know, mentioned to you in Utah that, you know, mule deer pretty much are using anything that's out on the landscape. So any of the larger culverts and any of the underpass bridges, as well as, you know, the few overpass structures that we have, are being used by mule deer. You know, elk are a different story. Elk are a little bit, they're a little harder critter to, you know, try to, you know, guess, you know, what they're going to do. You know, typically elk, you know, they're a lot more skittish and want to use structures. And so, you know, there are some type and size requirements that we, you know, try to use and try to build into these structures. But again, you know, like Brendan said earlier in the interview, you know, really it all comes down to landscape and terrain and topography and what's, you know, there at your disposal.
Here's a question. We got greater and greater probably habitat fragmentation for these animals because, you know, people are going into more and more places. We've got population growth, et cetera. How are you guys planning for that kind of growth in the future and dealing with both from the wildlife management side and from the safety perspective of UDOT? Do you guys have a working sort of plan in place or what's the future hold?
So we're getting better all the time. Right now we've started to take advantage of different types of tools, like, for example, GIS. We've mapped in GIS all of our existing wildlife mitigation structures, where they are, and also what the benefit of them has been. And then also we have, coupled with that, a GIS layer of the known hotspots for wildlife. And so using tools like GIS, we can overlay that data with our 30-year transportation plan and see where we have projects coming up, and are there projects in those hotspot areas, and are there things we can start planning for now to try to incorporate wildlife mitigation into our process and into our projects? So it's more, I think finally we've reached the pinnacle of our partnership, and we're starting to integrate that into the planning process rather than being reactive.
You know, when I first started working on these issues, you know, maybe 10 years ago or so, you know, with the Division of Wildlife, you know, we were, you know, looking, you know, more on a small scale on a project-by-project basis. And in recent years, you know, we really tried harder to kind of expand the scope of that. And, you know, and so now, you know, we're looking at a whole entire corridor, let's say 100 miles or 200 miles of a certain interstate or, you know, or heavily traveled state highway. And that's allowing us to kind of get out ahead of it, try to anticipate, you know, what the growth patterns are going to be. And, you know, to be able to identify those areas we know right now, as Brandon said, hot spots or, you know, high migration routes are really important habitats. And by doing that, you know, we can get out, you know, ahead of the game. And so, you know, when it's time to rebuild a roadway or to find funding for that. We kind of know what to anticipate that we're going to need to plan. And I think that's really helped us, kind of get the big, picture view. And so, we're using, those kind of corridor analyses to help us, prioritize, where are the most important areas, we got to be working, and, where are the ones that, we need to make sure that we, build wildlife mitigation into in the future. And I think we're really, heading in that direction. And I think it's been really, really effective in the last few years.
Fantastic. Ashley Green, Habitat Section Chief at the Utah Division of Wildlife Resources, and Brandon Weston, Environmental Services Director at the Utah Department of Transportation. I want to thank you both for coming in and having this this interesting conversation with me.
Thank you. Thank you very much for the invite.
You can find this interview and all of the conversations we feature on the program at our website, kcpw.org. And that's our show for today. Thanks again for tuning in. The Rundown was produced by Lauren Colucci. We had additional help from Jesse Ellis and Tyler Ford. Our theme music was composed by Tim Myers. Tomorrow on the program, tune in for a conversation with Republican Representative Brad Wilson, who sponsored the bill to require some welfare applicants to undergo drug testing. I'm Roger McDonough. Thanks for listening. The Utah Business Report and Marketplace are coming up next.